that's a red mic. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a white mic. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing a blue mic. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing a yellow mic. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. End the test. Take number one of the videotape deposition of Mr. Emmanuel Goldstein in the matter Universal City Studios Inc. et al. Plaintiffs versus Sean C. Remedies et al. Defendants in the United States District Court, Southern District of New York, number 00 CIV 277 LIKRLE. This deposition is being held at 1585 Broadway on June the 27th, 2000 at approximately 10:20 a.m. My name is Ruben Martinez from the firm of S5 Video Services. The court reporter is Mr. Thompson Nichols in association with S5 Deposition Services. Would the counselors please introduce themselves?
My name is Leon Gold. I'm with Proskauer Rose, counsel to the plaintiffs.
Carla Miller with Proskauer Rose, counsel to all plaintiffs.
Mark Litvak with the Motion Picture Association of America, counsel for plaintiffs.
Jessica Fahey, some associate counsel.
Morton Garbus, Frankfurt Garbus, one of the attorneys for the defendant.
Edward Hernstad, Frankfurt Garbus.
Would the court reporter please swear in the witness?
Mm-hmm. Just let me know that the caption you read is incorrect and should be changed, that two of the people you mentioned are no longer part of the case, but we will give you a correct caption before you type this up.
Rachel, Mr. Goldstein, do you swear to testifying about the giving of the truth, the whole truth, not about the truth, so I'll be God?
I did.
Awesome.
Actually, Martin, I don't think the caption has ever been officially changed.
It hasn't.
Did you file something?
Yes.
Look, we didn't file anything, but Aunt Ms. Reyes, the judge's law clerk, asks, every time we go to court, she asks, what's going on? Aren't these people out of the case? And she said she was going to talk to the clerk about getting it changed.
Okay. Thus, it isn't changed.
I think it's been done, but I don't know for sure.
Because our understanding procedurally was that the defendants that had settled out had to make a motion to change the caption to remove their names.
Let's find
out. We'll figure that out. Yeah. I hope that the judge's deputy can take care of it.
Correct.
Right. Exactly.
Mr. Goldstein, do you understand that people who create artistic work are entitled to copyright protection?
Absolutely.
I object to the question. Direct the witness not to answer. Go ahead.
On what grounds?
I think he's being examined as a fact witness here.
I asked him what understanding he has.
I object to the question. Allow the witness to answer.
What rights do you understand copyright holders have?
Object to the question.
I answer anyway? Okay. Basically, if you create something, you're entitled to benefit from it. No problem with that.
Do you understand that copyright holders who have a right to decide who can see or use their work?
That's not my understanding of how copyright works.
What is your understanding of how copyright works?
I think
works?
I'll object to this, and I'll direct the witness not to answer. The witness is not a lawyer. The same objections were made when Mr. Valente was being examined, and he was directed not to answer the question. I'll direct the witness not to answer.
Do you understand that people who have copyrights have the right to maximize their return from the copyright?
Yes.
And what does that mean to you, maximize the right to their, maximize the return on their copyrighted work?
It means they're entitled to benefit however much the market dictates they'll benefit from the selling of their work.
you understand that the motion picture companies who have copyrights in their, on their movies have that right?
Yes.
Do copyright holders have the right to decide, as you understand it, who will see their work?
I object to the question.
I don't see how that's possible.
Well, do they have the right, do copyright holders have the right, for instance, if the copyright holder is a novelist, do you understand he'd have the right to decide who can sell his books to the public?
I object to it. With Mr. Goldstein's version of the copyright law is not at issue. What is at issue is what he did. And to suggest that because he has one set of beliefs rather than another set of beliefs, something that is lawful and appropriate is somehow unlawful and appropriate because any view he has, it seems to me, is improper. It seems to me what you're doing is you're asking questions for the benefit of the viewing audience, and that the judge would not permit at a trial the kinds of questions you're now asking.
You can answer the question.
I forgot the question.
Yes, certainly. Can you read the question back?
Mm-hmm. The copyright holders have the right, for instance, if the copyright holder is a novelist, do you understand that you would have the right to decide who can sell his books to the public?
Yes.
Do you understand that copyright holders have the right to protect their work against people who would use it without permission?
Absolutely.
Do you believe that anyone is entitled to assist others in using or taking the copyright work without permission?
I object to the form of the question. I would wait for a direction from the judge before the witness is required to answer that.
You're directing the witness not to answer that question?
No, I'll allow the witness to answer.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak to the witness for 5 minutes at this point. Before we go on to the deposition.
Well, you first of all, you want to answer the pending question. Would you read the question back to the witness?
Do you think that anyone is entitled to assist others in using or taking the copyright work without permission?
I think that depends on the definition of the word assist. If you're explaining how technology works, then absolutely you're allowed to describe that, to explain that. If you're talking about leading somebody by the hand to make an illegal copy of something, then no, absolutely not.
Can we take that 5 minute break?
Well, I object to that, Mr. Garbus, because I think based on what we've done so far, and since we've only started about 7 minutes ago, that there can't be any reason for a break other than to instruct your witness on how to deal with certain questions along the lines I'm asking. So I'm going to take that position with the judge. I think it's improper.
Okay. We had, as a courtesy, throughout these depositions, irrespective of when it occurred, always allowed, and this happened repeatedly with your witnesses, any time a lawyer defending a case said, I'd like to speak to a witness, even when a question was posed, we had extended that courtesy to each other. Basically, we extended it to you, because these were your witnesses being examined. I would just expect that we would get the same courtesy here.
Yes, but we didn't take a break 5 minutes after the deposition.
No, yes, we did. We did the exact same thing previously. I don't have all the depositions in front of me. My memory is we did it with Schumann.
What's your understanding of the meaning of the word assist?
I would object to the form. This witness is not a lawyer. He's not being deposed as a lawyer. He's a journalist who printed information. And I think to ask him his definition of assist is improper, except to the extent that he had conversations with his lawyer. And with his lawyer, he had discussions of that word. And to that extent, I would claim a privilege with respect to it. Do you have any independent knowledge of what that word means other than the conversations you've had with me or with Mr. Hernstadt? And if it's based on conversations you've had with me and Mr. Hernstadt, then just say it's based on conversations with your lawyer, and then it's privileged.
Mm-hmm. We did discuss that, so I have to say it's privileged.
Do you ever use the word assist in your writing?
I may have on occasion.
What does it mean when you use it?
To help, but it's a very general type of a word.
Just tell me what it means to you
help?
When you write.
To aid.
To help or aid?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Using that definition of the word assist, do you understand that anyone is entitled to assist others in taking or using a copyright work without permission?
I'll object to it. To the extent that your knowledge of the copyright law or the words assist come from conversations with me or your attorneys, then just say it. And to the extent that these discussions were held in the context of preparation for this case, it is then privileged.
Well, again, that's something that we discussed, whether it's a synonym or the word assist, it's still something we've discussed.
Prior to that, when did that discussion take place? Just the date?
Before we came over here.
Today?
Yes.
Okay. And you spent about an hour?
Not on
Mr.
the word
Orbit.
Assist, but yeah, on various things, yeah.
Okay. Had you met with him before?
Before
for the purpose
today.
Of preparing for your deposition?
Once, yes.
When was that?
Yesterday.
When was it you talked about whether anyone is entitled to assist others in taking someone's copyrighted work without permission?
I'll object to the question.
Today or yesterday?
I'll object to the question. It's privileged. When he spoke to his lawyer about it is irrelevant. It's privileged.
Can I answer?
Yes.
Today.
Did you have any understanding prior to yesterday of whether anyone was entitled to assist others in using a copyrighted work without permission?
I'll object to it, except to the extent that you had some awareness of whether linking was permitted or not permitted and where you got that understanding.
I'm not interested in your definition of the word linking or posting in this question. What I'm asking you is, before you talk to your lawyer about the subject,
mm-hmm.
your present lawyers about the subject, did you have any understanding before that of whether anyone was entitled to assist others in taking a copyrighted work without permission?
I object to it. That specifically, objective form, that specifically relates to the question of linking. So if he had some knowledge of whether linking was permissible or not permissible, the question is, did he have any discussions about linking, or did he have any knowledge, either from the previous court's decision or now, about linking, which is what assisting is?
Could you read the question back to the witness and then I'm going to ask you to answer that, sir?
Did you have any understanding prior to yesterday of whether anyone was entitled to assist others in using a copyrighted work without permission?
I had an opinion, yes.
What was your opinion?
That any kind of copyright infringement is wrong, and helping someone obviously to infringe upon copyright would be wrong too.
Yesterday, did you have any understanding of whether anyone was entitled to break through a protective device which protects digital copyrighted work in order to take that work without permission?
Objection, unless you're also including out the term fair use. It's misleading unless you put that qualifier in the sentence.
Do you remember your question? The question, Mr. Nelson?
I appreciate having it read back.
Yesterday, did you have any understanding of whether anyone was entitled to break through a protective device which protects digital copyrighted work in order to take that work without permission?
Yes.
And what was your understanding?
That kind of thing is wrong. I'm taking something without permission is wrong.
And prior to yesterday, did you have the same understanding? Strike that. Is there a time in 1999 when you were posting from DECSS?
In 1999, as of I believe late November, we mirrored the site on our website.
On our website.
Did 2600 ever post DECSS?
That's what mirroring is.
Yes. For what purpose?
At the time, it had only just happened a couple of weeks earlier. We had noted the events that someone had figured out the encryption standard being used by DVDs and had found it to be rather badly written. When we saw that those people were being intimidated and forced to shut down their websites, as journalists, we stood up and said, this is wrong. And then we were listed in all future court records.
You only mirrored DECSS after this suit was started?
No, we mirrored DECSS after we became aware that people around the world were being threatened because they were showing people how the encryption worked.
And what was the purpose?
Well, as journalists, we have a very firm sense of freedom of information. And we believe people have the right to know how things work. As a publisher of a magazine that deals with such issues, I feel strongly that we all have both the desire and the right to know how things around us operate. And I don't see that as related in any way to theft of our services.
When you mirrored or posted DECSS on 2600, how did you make sure that people who simply wanted to see movies that were copyrighted without buying them would not use DECSS?
Well, there's two answers to that. First of all, when you tell someone how something works, when you give information out, people can always use information in a good or a bad way. That's just the nature of information. The second part of that is that what was posted, DECSS, has got nothing to do with illegal copies. And I think that's been proven time again. I don't think a single case of copyright violation has been traced to DECSS. Copies of DVDs have been made. We had, in fact, reported 2 years earlier, on November 25th, 1997, on one of our radio shows, that illegal copies of DVDs were being made in what is known as bit-by-bit transfer, using a program called Soft DVD. And what the DECSS code showed instead was that the encryption was weak, and that encryption was more about control of the playing back, as to where you played it back and how you played it back, not making copies.
Did you understand at the time you posted DECSS that most people who own computers would not understand how DECSS works, even if they downloaded DECSS?
Most people I know who have computers would understand it.
But you know far fewer than 50% of the people in the United States that have computers.
Absolutely.
You know far fewer than 2% mm-hmm. of the people who own computers.
We reached 1/10 of 1/1%.
I don't know that many people. But.
Did you believe it was appropriate to post DECSS even though 10 people, and only 10 people, might use it, might download it, for the purpose of finding out how it works?
I'll object to the form of the question. No proof that 10 people have used it.
an objective form of question on whether he knew or understood.
I'd have to say that if I applied that logic to everything I wrote, I wouldn't be writing anything.
But
because someone can always take what I've written and use it in a bad way, and then I'd be up nights worrying about, you know, what they did wrong. I don't think anyone has ever used the ECSS to pirate a film.
Do I take it that you agree that you had the right, or you believe you had the right, to post the ECSS, even though far less than 1% of the people who would download it would have any interest in how CSS or DECSS works?
I object to the form of question.
I'm not sure it's possible to say how many people who downloaded it understand it. I don't think a significant portion of the American public downloaded it. I do think the people who went to the website read the text that surrounded it and hopefully learned something from the text, and if they were interested in pursuing it further, learning more about the technology, then they had a look at the program as well.
Well, you could have... Was there anything wrong in your printing the text that accompanied the letters DECSS?
I'm not sure I understand.
You had an absolute right, didn't you, in saying whatever you said on your website, except for DECSS, isn't that right?
Jeff, with one question. Can you first return DECSS on his website? Is that the question?
You can answer.
Can you just repeat that back? It's a little unclear.
I don't understand the question. I don't know what the witness can say.
You have the right in there saying whatever you had on your website except for DECSS. Isn't that right?
I had the right to say what I said on the website, and I believe that extends to posting the code as well.
Do you or any corporation you're affiliated with have a copyright, own a copyright?
Yeah, our words are copywritten in our magazines.
And why did you? Who caused them to be copyrighted?
I did.
Why?
It's standard to have a copyright to protect your interest. Someone could take 2600 and just simply reproduce it if we had no copyright.
What interests were you protecting?
Well, our interests, obviously. We have words that we write, and we don't want somebody else just taking them. But by the same token, we have no problem with people spreading our information around, because we write it for the purpose of being read, but we do hold the copyright.
I think I'm confused. I don't understand why you have the copyright if you say that you don't care who uses your material.
Well, there's different standards of use. If someone were to take our magazine and simply duplicate it, well, that's obviously very bad. If somebody were to, say, quote something from one of our articles, we have no problem with that. We consider that fair use.
In other words, if they were quoted something, but not the whole thing, you consider that okay.
Right.
But you were and when you got the copyright, one of the purposes was to protect anyone from taking the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is it your understanding that the current court injunction against your posting DECSS violates your right?
I wouldn't say it violates my rights. I say it's open to contention whether it's right or not, but obviously we're following the injunction.
Do you?
We respect it.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Did you get the complete answer?
Yes, I did.
Do you believe that the current court injunction violates rights that you have in any way, shape, or form?
Objective form.
Or do you believe the current court injunction is perfectly proper and appropriate? And I'm asking for your beliefs.
Objective form of question. And if you can, exclude anything you can from any privileged communication and any conversation with counsel telling you what your rights are. So to the extent that it comes out of conversation with counsel, just say that and I'll claim the privilege.
Mm-hmm. I respect the injunction.
Excuse me, sir.
I respect the injunction. I don't believe it. The injunction is violating my rights per se. I think it's a fight that we're engaged in, and obviously, the injunction was filed against us. We respect that, and we followed it. So,
well, do you understand that the injunction prohibits you and 2600 from posting DECSS?
And we've done just that.
And do you think it's appropriate and right that the court did that?
I object to it. To the extent that what the judge did is right or wrong, because that's conversations you had with counsel.
Oh my gosh. Morton, I object to what you're doing.
I see a difference between what the judge said and what the people behind the case are saying. Obviously, I don't believe the people behind the case are right. I don't think the judge acted improperly. I think the judge is doing what judges do, and I have every faith in
that. But what do judges do?
Judges make decisions based on the evidence given to them, and it's my hope that we'll present evidence to prove that we're right in the end.
Your Honor, do you know this motion to vacate the injunction?
Well, then I take it you don't believe that the injunction is inappropriate.
The injunction in itself.
I object to the final question.
Do you think you have a right to post DECSS?
Yes, I do.
Why?
I consider it a form of speech. I consider it a form of basically writing about technology, showing how things work, and I think it's a very it's a chilling effect if you start punishing people for showing how something works. It's one step away from punishing someone from talking about it. And I think as journalists, we need to stand up to that.
I'd like to have this marked as plaintiff's exhibit one. I'm going to show you Exhibit 1, Mr. Goldstein. Give you a chance to look at it. It won't take very long.
Okay.
What does that mean to you?
It means you've written DECSS on a piece of paper.
But what does it mean?
What does it mean?
Yes.
Doesn't really mean a whole lot to me, to be honest. It's
I see, sir.
You've written something on a piece of paper, but this is not the same thing as the DECSS code.
I object to the form of the question.
Does you say that it's not the DECSS code? Is that right?
Five letters on a piece of paper? No, sir, it's not.
Is that a word?
I object to the form of the
question. DECSS.
I object to the form of the question. I direct the witness not to answer. The DECSS speaks for itself. You written five letters on a piece.
You're going to direct the witness not to answer? On what ground?
Can you tell me where you're going with this deposition?
No.
We've now been here. It's now close to 11 o'clock. It seems to me that what you've done in the last half
hour
is ask questions that have limited relevancy.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I appreciate it. Don't apologize until after. I appreciate if you get to the questions that I perceive to be are at issue in this lawsuit. I mean, I think it's very cute to write the ECSS on a piece of paper, but you didn't even examine it for half an hour. But it has nothing to do with the issues in this lawsuit.
The question.
My understanding is that five letters written on a piece of paper.
I think an objection is okay, but you're filibustering. No, I think you're filibustering. That's not an objection. That's improper. Now you can answer the question. What does that, is that a word, DECSS?
Not in the English language. It's five letters. It stands for something.
And I take it has no meaning to you.
In that form? Well, it has meaning in that it represents something. It represents what we're talking about today. Other than that, I'm not sure if that's the way you're presenting it.
Do you believe that when you were posting DECSS, you were engaged in an act of civil disobedience?
Objection. I've already testified. It was the media. He's presenting as part of the story.
When we first posted it, we posted it as journalists talking about a news story.
How was the posting accomplished?
The posting of the actual DECSS or the articles?
The posting of DECSS, of what you call the actual DECSS. DECSS?
I wasn't the person who actually copied it, but I imagine it was taken from one of the sites that had it up on the net. We verified what was in it and put it up on our site.
By whom?
Probably our webmaster.
And who's that, sir?
Our webmaster.
And who's that, sir?
His online name is Mackie.
And his real name?
I know his first name. His first name is Micah. His last name begins with the letter S. And that's really all I know. I know how to email him. I know how to get a hold of him, but I don't know his full last name.
He's not employed by you?
No.
Did you ask him to post the ECSS on your site?
We talked about it and agreed that that was the appropriate thing to do.
So you did ask him to do it?
We conferred. We agreed together. I didn't direct him to do this.
Does he have any ownership of your site?
Not as such. I mean, he has a say in the kinds of things that go on there.
Do you have an ownership of your site?
Yes. Yeah.
You own stock in the company that controls your site?
It's a private corporation, yes.
Did you approve of what he did posting the CSS on your site?
DECSS
on your site?
Yes.
In the past 6 months, have you been engaged in any kind of reverse engineering of anything?
I'm a journalist. I'm not an engineer.
So the answer is no, sir?
The answer is no.
In the last 6 months, have you been engaged in any cryptographical research?
No.
Prior to the court proceedings, did you talk to any people about the ECSS who were in fact engaged or planning to engage in reverse engineering?
Not with my knowledge. I talked to a lot of people on the internet. People message back and forth, and some might be very knowledgeable in certain fields. So it's very hard for me to say that whether or not I was talking to somebody who was doing something like that.
Since the commencement of this lawsuit, have you talked to any people who are using DECSS for the purpose of reverse engineering?
To be honest, I've never found anybody who's successfully gotten DECSS to work.
The answer to my question is no.
No.
Yet. You haven't talked to any people. And where did you get the understanding that people can't get DECSS to work?
I've gotten messages, again, on the internet. I remember back towards the later part of last year seeing messages from people who were trying to figure it out, and it was too complex for them. I imagine there are some people who have gotten it to work and have been able to view DVDs on their Linux machines, which is the purpose of it. But myself, I have not talked to anybody personally who's done that.
To your knowledge, is anyone in the world currently engaged in reverse engineering DECSS or CSS?
Which?
CSS.
I think it's already been done. I think CSS has pretty much been shown to be not very secure encryption-wise.
Do you know any of any cryptographical research with respect to DECSS that's been done anywhere in the world?
Not specifically, no.
How did you come to the understanding that the purpose of DECSS was to view movies on a Linux machine?
There's been quite a lot of discussion in various forums and at conferences and various places like that by people who are extremely knowledgeable in the field, from the founders of Linux to its users. And it became very clear very quickly that this program was simply made so that they would have a way of viewing DVDs as well, since they were not granted a license to have a DVD player on their machines.
Do you know if there is a Linux-based DVD player that exists then?
I had heard there was something being developed that was not open source. It was closed source, but it was something that was being developed.
Well, then how are people strike that? Why do you say the purpose of DECSS was to allow DVDs to be played in a Linux-based player if there is no Linux-based player?
Because by using DECSS, you would have a Linux-based player, which previously did not exist. In fact, previously was illegal.
You mean that in order to play the movies that you're talking about, people are decrypting CSS?
The only way to play a movie on a Linux machine is to decrypt it so that you can see it on a different platform. The way it had been before, you had to buy a particular operating system or a particular machine that had already been granted a license, which meant that the thousands, millions of people with Linux machines were unable to use DVDs. They'd already bought the DVDs, they'd already bought the computers, but they were unable to use them.
Is that because the people that held the copyrights to the movies encrypted DVDs so they couldn't be played except on a licensed player?
My understanding is that they encrypted them and only gave licenses to organizations willing to pay very large fees. And that's basically my understanding of it.
Now, once you decrypt the movie, how can you play it if there's no player?
You're talking about a Linux system, a Linux operating system?
Objection to the board question. You
don't yes, we are talking about
you don't Linux. Understand the technology, Mr. Cole. I object to the question. It doesn't okay. make sense. Go ahead. Answer.
Ask one more time, so I'm clear.
Once you decrypt the movie, how can you watch it if there's no player?
My understanding with the way DECSS works, and I could be wrong because I've never used it myself, is that by using this particular tool, you then have a player that will allow you to play the film that you've decrypted. And if that's not the case, then there might be another utility out there that does make a player. It's a software-based player.
You're not sure?
I'm not entirely sure on that, no.
When did you first find out, as you say, that the purpose of DECSS was to view movies on a Linux player?
Well, right away, that we knew that was the primary purpose. And,
how? Did you know?
By talking to people who are experts in the field of Linux.
Who did you talk to?
I know there are some people involved in the LIVID project.
What project?
LIVID, L-I-V-I-D, which was a project to make a DVD player for Linux, which has been going on for quite some time.
My question was, who did you talk to? What person did you talk to that
I don't know
you?
Specific names, unfortunately. I mean, these are people I talked to either online or met briefly at a conference.
What is the, I see, you have no record of the fact that they gave you this information, no written record?
I have no written record myself, but it's been posted in many public forums.
Did you exchange communications with the people involved in the LIVID project by email?
I may have at some point last year when it was first unfolding, yes.
Do you have those emails?
No.
You wipe them out of
I don't save outgoing mail, and I'm very stingy with what I save because I get so much mail.
Can it be retrieved from your hard drive?
No, it's so long ago.
How long can you retrieve messages on your hard drive?
I've never tried. I mean, it's a Unix-based system. I think it's very, it's not like the White House. It's very difficult to retrieve something.
Was it fair to say you actually don't know whether or not these messages could be retrieved?
Oh, I'm pretty positive they can't be retrieved.
When you mean pretty positive, what does pretty positive mean? Not positive or positive?
I'm positive.
Positive?
Yeah.
And how did you get to know that it is positive that you can't retrieve messages that are 6 months old?
Well, I based that on when I wanted to retrieve things in the past, and I asked sysadmins, can I get sysadmins? I asked them, can I get this back? And they say, no way. I imagine that probably holds true no matter what the contents were.
And you have no knowledge of anyone in the LIBET project that you talked to about DECSS?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, it's not that large an organization, so I don't think it's difficult to figure out.
The legal space in the deposition, Mr. Goldstein returns the deposition, so you can call him in or put him in the deposition.
Okay. Do you know any people who belong or who work on the LIBET project, whether or not you've talked to them?
Just through communication and possibly meeting them at a conference.
And do you know their names?
I probably remember if I heard them, but I don't remember the names off the top of my head. As I said, LIBET project, my understanding, is an ongoing project to make a DVD player for a Linux machine.
Could you read that back to me?
Sure. As I said, LIBET project, my understanding, is an ongoing project to make a DVD player for Linux machines.
And they're still at it?
I believe so.
How do you know?
I've just heard from various public discussions.
Prior to your conversations with your attorneys this week, did you believe that you were allowed to post DECSS or link to other sites posting DECSS as long as several people downloaded DECSS to engage in cryptographical research?
Can I hear the question again?
Prior to your conversations with your attorneys this week, did you believe that you were allowed to post DECSS or link to other sites posting DECSS as long as several people downloaded DECSS to engage in cryptographical research?
I object to the form of the question. It's several questions in one. Can't you just ask the question simply? There are just several different parts of the question, Mr. Cole. Don't you see that? Do you understand the question? Can you answer?
I'll give it my best shot. Basically, I think it's not a conditional thing when you post something. You post something as long as somebody downloads it for a particular purpose. Our understanding was that it was perfectly okay to post this. Obviously, when the injunction happened, we stopped posting it. And linking is a completely different issue.
So I take it was not your understanding that you were allowed to post DECSS as long as several people downloaded CSS to use, downloaded DECSS.
I object to the form.
In order to engage in cryptographical research.
Well, I mean, I think I answered it as best I can. It's not a yes-no question. They have a conditional phrase in there, so.
Is it your belief that you can that DECSS can be made available to anyone in the United States as long as a few people use it for cryptographical research or reverse engineering?
I object to the form of the question. I don't understand that it's a conditional question. Can't you rephrase the question in an intelligible way?
You can answer it, Mr. Jones.
Again, it's information. We can't put conditions on the exchange of information and say you can only read this if you're going to use it in a particular way. We put up information on our site and people read it. And that's the relationship we have.
So your right to post the ECSS doesn't derive from the fact that, it doesn't derive from how it is used by the end user, is that right?
I'll object to it. That's not what the witness said.
Is it true? I don't care what the witness said. I'm asking.
But then you can't rephrase the. If you don't care what the witness said, Mr. Gold, then you can't say, "Isn't this what you just said?" If you're not going to listen to the witness, then don't listen to the witness. But you can't phrase questions that way. I object to the form of the question, and you know better than that.
Do you believe that DECSS can be made available to anyone in the United States? No, strike that. Do you believe that the end use of DECSS has nothing to do with the lawfulness of posting it?
I object to the form of the question. I object to the question on the grounds that it calls for a legal conclusion. This witness is not a lawyer, nor should he be asked about questions concerning legal conclusions. Is anything in that question that comes as a result of conversations that you and I have had as counsel, namely with respect to legal conclusions? Just say it. If you think you can answer the question in some intelligible way, then answer it.
Could you read back the question, please?
Mr. Gold, I don't know what you're doing. These questions are not admissible at a trial. The judge won't let you ask them, so why ask them here now?
I think the witness asked for you to reread the question.
Yeah. Do you believe that the end use of DECSS has nothing to do with the lawfulness of posting it?
I can't answer the question, sir. I can't answer the question.
It's a really hard question for you to answer. I don't think they're related, no. That's my view as a journalist, though. I'm not a legal expert.
Mr. Roberts, I'm going to respectfully request that you cease from directing your witness on how to answer a question. If you wanted to do that before you came here today, you had ample opportunity.
I had no...
If it continues, I'll take it to the judge, and we'll play the movie.
Whatever you want to do is...
I'll have to. It's inappropriate. Prior to talking to your lawyer in the last 2 days, did you have an understanding of the meaning of the word fair use?
Yes.
Is that an understanding you came to through your profession as a journalist?
Yes.
And what was that understanding?
That it's legal to use bits of copyrighted material for the purpose of describing something, showing an example of something. For instance, even a student presenting something to a class might play something from a videotape, for instance. That's fair use. You might see something on television that shows a scene from a particular movie. That's fair use. Parody is fair use.
Was it your understanding before you talked to your lawyers in the past 2 days that fair use only related to using bits of copyrighted work or pieces of copyrighted work, but not the whole thing?
That's my understanding. The whole thing isn't exactly fair use.
I'd like to have this marked as plaintiff's exhibit number 2, a document. Which on its cover says 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, Volume 17, Number 1, Spring 2000.
Have you made 3 copies of it?
No, I haven't had a chance to do that. You have copies of it? Congratulations.
Okay. Can I see
it? I'll show you a copy, Mr. Corbett.
Look.
You have it. What's that?
Off the record, I'm just going to have you spell BCSS wrong. I'm sorry. I'm going to find this in the file with the capital D.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That's a friend's spelling.
Okay, you win. Carla gets the medal.
I don't think, Carla, that you... Mr. Olson, may I see that?
Sure.
Thank you, sir. What's that? Yes, I'm sure. Can you describe that document, Mr. Olson?
Yes, this is the magazine I published, 2600, The Hacker Quarterly. This is The Hacker Quarterly. This is the spring 2000 edition.
On page 7, there's what appears to be a photograph.
Yeah.
Is that in fact a photograph?
It's a doctored photograph. This is it's parody. It's basically taken from the World Trade Organization demonstrations, and we slapped MPAA on the back of their jackets.
So is it true that the only thing in this picture that's not true, not actual, are the initials MPAA?
Well, the initials are...
Well, I mean, that's not a photograph of somebody...
No, as I said, we put MPAA over whatever was there before, if there was anything there before. So no, they were not MPAA stormtroopers in the streets.
But pictures of these troops or police people,
mm-hmm.
That was an actual photo?
That was an actual photograph, yes. I was taken in Seattle in November.
And in what demonstration did you say?
World Trade Organization.
And what was the demonstration about?
There was a demonstration against the World Trade Organization in Seattle, November 30th, I think.
Second paragraph, there's some discussion about a Mitnick. I gather that's a Mr. Mitnick, page 5.
Page 5.
Oh,
yes.
Who is he?
Kevin Mitnick was a computer hacker who had been in prison for 5 years.
Do you know what he was convicted of?
In the end, he was convicted of basically misrepresenting himself on the telephone and having source code that belonged to cellular phone companies that he was looking at.
Do you know anything about the charge of misrepresenting himself on the telephone?
It's basically calling someone on the phone saying that you're an employee of a particular company when you're not, in order to get some bit of information. That's my understanding of it in his particular case.
And that's the only crime you know of that he was convicted?
In the end, that's the only crime he was charged with, yes. And that's why we took the case up, because we thought it was rather unfair that someone be locked away for 5 years for something rather minor.
And when you say you took the case up, what does that mean?
As far as writing about it, as far as following it, and we're currently producing a documentary on it.
Where did 2600 come from?
You mean the name?
Part of the name of the hacker quarterly?
Well, 2600 is a frequency that, if you go back into history, back into the early 1960s, when people first started exploring the phone network, the sound of 2600 hertz tones would basically disconnect whatever call you were connected to and put you in what's known as operator mode, where you could basically explore the entire phone network. That was back in the day when there was just one phone network run by AT&T.
Could you then make calls without paying for them?
That was one thing you could do, but you could also explore and talk to operators in various places and just learn how the whole thing was pieced together. And that's where the term phone phreaking was established. That's where a lot of hackers trace their roots to, just exploring one of the first major computer systems in existence.
And you adopted the 2600 as your masthead, your banner?
Yeah, well, the number had some significance, and it was rather an unusual name, so it appealed to us.
Were you ever involved in any activity in any way relating to abusing the phone system?
No.
Did you ever make phone calls without paying for them?
No.
No, my objection to the question. And the previous question.
Have you ever been convicted of any? Any crime?
I'd gotten in trouble for computer hacking in 1984, which was the first year our magazine came out.
I object to the question. I object to the time on the inquiry. I think I'll direct you to the stuff and answer. Unless the judge is.
I'm afraid.
I would ask you to come on. If you can get a ruling from the court that is favorable to you, and answer the question.
When you use the word in trouble, sir, what did that mean to you?
I object to the question.
I direct the witness not to answer until such time as the court rules.
That for a second, sir.
Sure.
Thank you. Turning to page 6 of the document, the right-hand column, about in the middle of the paragraph, which is the next to the, which is the last full paragraph on the page, the following words are written, quote, so, under the DMCA, it is illegal to play your DVD on your computer if your computer isn't licensed for it, close quote.
I don't see where you are.
You don't see the language?
I see.
Have you got it now?
I have it now.
Okay. Is that true?
That's
I object to it. It's a legal conclusion.
That's my understanding. I mean, I wrote that piece.
So, what's that, sir?
I wrote that piece.
Yeah.
So that is my understanding, yes.
And how did you come to that understanding?
I'll object to it. I think I'll direct the witness not to answer. It's
again.
A legal conclusion.
Again.
If the judge directs him to answer, then he'll answer the question.
The next sentence states, quote, it's illegal for you to figure out a way to play a European DVD on your TV set. Is that true?
I'll object to the question, direct the witness not to answer, calls for a conclusion of law. If the judge directs a journalist to answer about something that is written, then I'll of course answer.
And if the last sentence says, if you rent a DVD, I think it says, and if you rent a DVD from your local video store, figuring out a way to bypass the commercials in the beginning could land you in court or even prison, close quote. Is that true?
I direct the witness not to answer. It calls for a legal conclusion. To the extent that it's based on conversations with counsel, it comes within the privilege. The judge decides that the privilege doesn't apply or that he should answer the question, then he certainly will.
I believe, Mr. Goldstein, that you wrote this piece that we're now reading.
Yes.
We're now making some kind of fair use of.
Yeah, you make copies of it. That's perfectly okay.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Now, if that was a DVD, you might have some trouble.
What's that, sir?
If that was a DVD, it might be a different story.
You mean if anyone makes a copy of a DVD, he violates the law?
I'll object to the question.
Do you believe that, sir?
I'll object to the question. 2600 wouldn't sue. DVD might sue. MPAA might sue. It's not just a question of the law. I direct the witness not to answer.
The end of that page, the following is contained. The world the MPAA and mega corporations want us to live in is a living hell. Close quote. What did you mean by living hell?
Well, what we're going through right now is kind of a living hell. I see that happening to a lot more people.
So the only thing you meant by living hell is that the MPAA would cause suits to be brought against people it thought were violating the law?
I believe Jack Valente said they'd file 1,000 lawsuits a day if necessary.
Against people who violate the law?
Against people they feel like filing suits against.
Is that what he said, or did you just make that up?
Not the last part, but he did say 1,000 lawsuits a day. That was accurate.
Was he talking about lawbreakers?
I'll object to it.
Did you understand that he was talking about lawbreakers?
I don't really know what he was talking about, to be honest. He basically seem to think that lots of people are lawbreakers without really describing how they broke the law.
Can we take our morning break now? It's 11:30.
Sure.
The time is 11:22 a.m. We're going off the record. The time is 11:40 a.m. We're back on record.
Mr. Goldstein, did you have an objection?
I'm going to throw my objection to your question about the 1984 incident. If you wanted to sue it, you can pursue it.
Oh.
And it's appropriate if you want to pursue it, I think we should pursue it.
You referred, I believe, to getting in some trouble in 1984.
Yeah.
What's that about?
It involved one of the first cases of computer hacking. Basically, there was a system, still is a system known as Telenet, where basically it was protected with one-letter passwords, the letter A, and a lot of organizations were wide open. Raytheon, Coca-Cola, in fact, even the executive office of the president. And when they finally discovered that their system was wide open, I basically came forward and explained it to them. I was indicted, but I think I was dealt with fairly. I paid restitution and was on probation. I never did it again. And from that point, I've tried to set a good example through the magazine so people don't make that kind of mistake and so that they're dealt with fairly if they do.
Did you plead guilty to some charge?
I believe back then it was wire fraud, yeah. And it was basically, I explained how the system worked to them, and I think they benefited from that.
You should know, Mr. Gold, my understanding is the file was sealed, and none of this is a matter of public record.
Oh.
I would expect you to treat the record appropriately on your own motion.
Certainly. Certainly.
My understanding also is, and I could be wrong, that he was given an ACD, which is an adjournment contemplation of dismissal.
Which is the what, sir?
An adjournment contemplation of dismissal, or the equivalent of, so that the record was sealed and charges against him were dismissed.
I've not seen, because it's not public knowledge, what the record is. So again, I would ask you to deal with this transcript appropriately. I didn't want to get put into the position. Mr. Goldstein didn't want to be put in the position of having not to answer any question you raised, though the fact that the file is sealed, it seems to me, is of significance.
Just so that we understand this clearly, I gather what you're asking me is to show this only to the lawyers working on the case and including lawyers at MPA working on the case.
No, I'm asking you to use your judgment as to how you deal with this appropriately.
Well, let me tell you what I think I'm going to do, because we'll send the transcript to lawyers for the companies, to lawyers for the MPA, and to lawyers here, and we'll use it in court. Is there anything about that that you find inappropriate so I can consider
right.
it?
I will take it under advisement.
Yeah, we'll designate the ordinary course.
Right.
Just tell me what you mean and what you want, and if it doesn't block me from what I'm doing, that's what I'll do. That's all I'm asking. I have no interest in anything else but this case. And the word hacking,
mm-hmm.
What does that mean as you use it, sir?
My definition of hacking is basically a form of asking a lot of questions, experimenting with technology, basically twiddling with something until you get to work just right. And hacking can encompass any number of things that are in your own house, you know, things that you encounter on a day-to-day basis.
So it doesn't necessarily involve breaking into somebody else's computer system?
Not at all. That's a media definition. That's how the media has distorted the word over the past decade or so. But the real world of hacking, I think if you go through our pages, you'll see that it encompasses quite a bit more, not just things like that.
Well, what would it include, if you can give us an example?
Well, for instance, your own computer.
Uh-huh.
There's a world of things you can hack in your own computer. Your own telephone. There's ways of figuring out how to dial certain things. It's, you know, only simple-minded people think it's just to get a free phone call. No, there are things hidden within the switch. For instance, there's a number you dial to read back your phone number, and it's always considered a triumph when you figure out what number that is. To most people, hacking is a big waste of time because there is no immediate payoff, and that's something only people who are hackers understand, the thrill of figuring something out. I should say also a lot of journalists have the same thrill when they figure something out, when they chase down a source or uncover something no one else has uncovered. So I think the two are very tightly combined. And the fact that I'm both a hacker and a journalist, there's a lot to talk about.
Is the next chapter a regular piece in all issues of 2600?
You mean an editorial?
Is that your editorial?
Yeah, the editorial is always the first thing that appears after the staff box.
And you write all of the editorials?
Yes, I write the editorial.
Do I take it as far as you know?
Mm-hmm.
All statements made in your editorials are true?
It's my opinion.
Based on your information and belief?
Based on my opinion as a journalist, what I say is true.
Well, the journalist calls Bush a crook. The journalist says that Clinton is a felon. It doesn't necessarily mean he's an adjudicated a crook or adjudicated a felon.
That was very interesting, Mr. Gorbis, but could I respectfully...
Gorbis.
I said one.
Gorbis.
But if I can, Mr. Gorbis, may I just on this record just ask questions to your witness and have them answer it, and have you withhold all of your learning about whatever it is? Is it your belief that journalists have any special exemptions from the law that applies to everyone else?
No.
Can I see that? Thank you, sir. Reading a sentence at page 6, right-hand side. Let me see, is it? It's in the second full, it's in the...
Okay.
In the second full paragraph, there's the second sentence says, referring to, well, the paragraph begins, the MPAA is coming at us using a very scary piece of law that civil libertarians have been wanting to challenge since its inception. Do you see that?
Yes.
Yes.
What is it that you mean when you say civil libertarians have been wanting to challenge? What is it they've been wanting to challenge?
I object. It says what it says. He's not an interpreter. He wrote it.
Basically, it's Digital Millennium Copyright Act that civil libertarians such as those in the Electronic Frontier Foundation...
I'm sorry. It's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah, that people such as civil libertarians in the Electronic Frontier Foundation, as well as the ACLU, have been wanting to challenge. And I believe now they're challenging it because, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but... as a journalist, I see problems with the way it's written and with basically ways it can be abused.
What are the problems that you see?
Well, for instance, this whole thing here is based on an interpretation of the DMCA, which I don't think was the intention of the people who wrote the DMCA.
Which part of it?
Basically, that would make someone subject to lawsuits if they figure out how something works. You know, it seems to me to be something that's a pretty ingrained part of our society, where you're allowed to talk about things, figure things out, spread information. We know theft is wrong. We know taking something that doesn't belong to you is wrong, or misrepresenting yourself is wrong. But that's not what this is about. This is about figuring out how technology works and being told that that's wrong. And that's where I have a problem with it. But again, I have to stress, I'm not a lawyer. I'm speaking as a journalist. That's my opinion on it.
Are you involved in figuring out what DECSS means?
Well, in addition to not being a lawyer, I'm also not an engineer. I know many people who are engineers. and I respect what they do, and I believe I defend what they do in my pages.
Who is it? By name, if you can, if you know.
Who is what?
Who is trying to figure out what DECSS means?
You mean who is trying to...
I object to the form of the question. I also object to all these questions that call for his legal conclusion. The witness is stating his opinion as a journalist and not his position in this lawsuit.
Do you mean
not as a
lawyer?
Not his position in the lawsuit.
No, I thought you said physician. I thought it was possible. Okay.
Do you mean who's trying to figure out CSS? Because DECSS is pretty much
who's trying
figured
to
out.
Figure out CSS. Thank you. You're right.
Well, a lot of people. I mean, like I mentioned, people in the Linux world, people I believe in the Livid Project as well, although they were basically trying to create a Linux player. A lot of people have gotten very interested in how encryption works over the years. Encryption is a very important thing. It's our key to privacy. And it's traditional in the hacker world, when encryption goes bad, you tell people about it, because that way the next bit of encryption is a lot more secure. And I think also what you're seeing here, a lot of people think it would be wrong not to tell people when encryption doesn't work, as is the case with CSS.
And in the last answer that you gave, when you used the word, I'll quote, a lot of people, close quote, what did you mean?
Well, a lot of people in the community, in the Linux community, people on public forums, such as Slashdot, basically people on the net who know what they're talking about. People who run businesses, people who are engineers, scientists, you name it.
Do you know how many?
Thousands. I mean,
how do you know that?
I see the post. We talk to these people at meetings, at conferences. It's a lot of people, and also a lot of people who don't have knowledge that understand the journalistic implications here. So it's really helped us reach out to a lot of people.
In the second paragraph of the same paragraph, in the second sentence of the same paragraph, you wrote the following. It's called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and it basically makes it illegal to reverse engineer technology. Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding based on this lawsuit.
You think that's what this lawsuit is about?
It appears that way to me, that because DECSS was written for reverse engineering purposes. So,
for
reverse engineering purposes. So if that's found to be illegal, then under the DMCA.
The next sentence says, this means you're not allowed to take things apart and figure out how they work in the corporate entities involved. If the corporate entities involved don't want you to. Is that true?
That's based on my previous thought, that if that is in fact proven to be the case, then yes, that's how it would be decided.
And that's what this lawsuit is about, as far as you know?
That's what it looks like to me, yes.
Monthly 2600 meetings?
Yes, we meet on the first Friday of every month in cities. In fact, if you look on page 58, it's a list of all the cities we have meetings in around the world.
And when you say we, who are you talking about?
2600, the magazine, very loosely based group of people that have similar ideologies and things.
These meetings are held where?
Various public gathering places, for instance, in New York, in the lobby of Citicorp.
And who comes to them? Subscribers through 2600?
Everyone is welcome. Basically, subscribers, passersby, businessmen, kids, governmental agents, you name it. We get all kinds
are
of people.
These meetings, are any minutes taken of these meetings? Or?
No, perhaps meeting is the wrong word in this context. Gathering is probably a better word for your understanding. There is no agenda. There's no one person speaking to everybody. It's kind of, we think of it as kind of similar to what the internet world is like, where everybody has an equal voice. You talk to whoever you want to talk to. If you want to be anonymous, you be anonymous. You know, but basically, we respect each other. We don't break any laws. You know, we basically exchange information, talk, learn about things. We've been having meetings since 1987.
It would be correct to say that everybody comes to one place and sort of hangs. Is that what you mean?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Gathering.
No speeches?
No. Mm. Not that I know of, anyway.
What reverse engineering purposes was DECSS written for?
By reverse engineering CSS, it became possible to make DVDs playable on other operating systems besides Microsoft, Macintosh, both for operating systems like Linux and future operating systems that have not yet been written and may not have ever been written, because if your operating system can't do something basic like play a DVD, it's not going to be very popular.
How was DECSS cracked? Well, I'm sorry, how was CSS cracked?
Again, I'm not an engineer, but my understanding is that one of the companies that was licensed hadn't encrypted their copy of CSS, which made it possible to reverse engineer it based on that. So it was basically their irresponsibility that led to this.
So the fact that it was cracked didn't relate to how strong or weak it was?
It still had to be figured out after that. It probably made it easier, the fact that they didn't encrypt, their copy of it. But our basic view is that any form of encryption will eventually be cracked, and you have to live your life realizing that and always be prepared to improve your encryption.
And is that why you say that CSS was a weak system?
Objection, that's not what you said.
That's not.
I asked you a question.
That's not why I say that. I believe CSS was weak based on what I've been told by engineers. Yeah, I think it would have been cracked whether or not that company had an unencrypted copy or not.
It would have been cracked sooner or later.
Sooner or later, yeah, as any encryption will be.
Right. How long had CSS existed before one of its users didn't encrypt a DVD with it?
Just the form of questions we tested from 97. You put your question to pay a question. No respect, Mr. Goldberg, if you understand technology.
Who cares what you think? Don't be impolite. I find it very offensive. I'll take a test with you sometime after the case is over. Is that the sort of competition you have in mind?
Maybe you could read back the question. I kind of got distracted.
How long had CSS existed before one of its users didn't encrypt a DVD with it?
Well, CSS existed ever since DVDs were released, from my understanding. And again,
approximately how long?
I'd say DVDs were probably released, I think, around 95, 96. Again, I'm not entirely certain about this. But, and also, I'm presuming that the company, I believe its name is Xing, X-I-N-G, hadn't been encrypting all along. So that may or may not be true, but that's my understanding.
So CSS was out there for 4 to 5 years before it was cracked?
It may have been. Again, this is not something that I'm an expert in. They may have been a fairly new company that had just started using it, and maybe they were only doing it for 6 months. I don't know the facts in this.
Is the fact that CSS was being used for 4 to 5 years and then it was cracked in the way that you've described a reason why you say that CSS is weak or was weak?
I object to it. That's not what you said. That
that's why I asked him, is that true?
You're misstating the witness's testimony.
Could you read the question back to the witness?
You understand the question?
Very much. Let's read it back again.
Do you understand it? You want it read back?
Yeah, read it back.
Is the fact that CSS was being used for 4 or 5 years and then it was cracked in the way you described a reason why you say that CSS is weak or was weak?
I'm not certain it was being used that long, and I'm also not certain how long it existed in an insecure state so that it could be cracked quicker. I also don't know how long the people were actively trying to do this. While DVDs were released several years ago, DVDs on computers are a fairly new phenomenon. So I don't think very many people in the Linux community would be trying 4 years ago to crack this. But I think once they set their minds to it, it wasn't very difficult.
But they didn't do it without someone failing to encrypt.
That helped. I don't think that would have prevented things in the end.
What do you mean by, quote, in the end?
I think it would have, for one thing, the encryption was developed in a closed environment. If you want good encryption, you develop it in an open environment so people can test it before it actually goes on the market. CSS was developed so that nobody really knew the equation, and thus they didn't have a chance to really test it amongst the people who would figure it out. So I think that was a big disadvantage that they had, and that's something the open source community has always supported, is openly developing these things. So ironically, they would have had a more secure encryption standard had they consulted with these people.
Louder, the microphone won't pick up your.
As minus three, I think we're up to. A new story you wrote and put on the 2600 website?
Just trying to determine if this is one of the ones I wrote. I definitely approved it and put it on the 2600 website.
Well, take your time and read it and see if
right. You
wrote it. I don't think it's appropriate to talk to the witness, Mr. Gorbis, in between a question and an answer.
I believe this is one of Mackey's, just based on the phraseology.
And who was Mackey?
Mackey's our webmaster. But I read this and approved it.
Did you believe it true when you read it?
I believe it true when I read it, yes. There are a couple of technical issues here that have since been proven to be inaccurate. I think that goes to show that even we didn't have a complete understanding of the technology at the time.
What in the article do you know? What in this article
there's,
now believe was incorrect?
There's one part here, I think it's the third paragraph down under the date, where it says that that this facilitated the copying of DVDs. Again, it's the nature of the net when something is released that people don't always have the complete facts, and when we researched this more afterwards, and you'll find this in later news articles, we realized that it was not about copying DVDs. We were kind of taken in at the beginning too. It's not about that at all.
What sentence were you reading?
First sentence in the third paragraph.
As a result, they were able to create a DECSS. They were able to create DECSS,
yes.
Comma, a free DVD decoder, comma, that not only facilitated the creation of previously unavailable open source DVD players for Linux, dash, also allowed people to copy DVDs, period.
Right.
Are you now saying that any part of that sentence is incorrect?
The last part of that sentence is incorrect because as
which
we later...
Part? You mean the also allowed people to
yes.
copy? Well, is it a fact that the free DVD decoder that you talked about at the beginning of the paragraph in fact did allow people to copy DVDs?
Now, the fact is that DVDs have always been able to be copied. The only thing that DECSS does is allow them to be played on a different platform.
And it's your testimony that DECSS does not decrypt?
DECSS does decrypt. It does not make it any easier to copy. It allows you to be able to view it on the platform of your choice.
When you decrypt DVD, is a copy made on your hard drive?
I've never used the program. So
I don't know
if a copy is made on your computer. I don't know anybody with the size of a computer that would be able to hold an entire DVD. It's an incredible
amount of space.
So
what you're saying is you don't know whether or not a copy of the DVD is made when you decrypt it on your hard drive.
I don't know for sure. I think it's irrelevant because
Before we get to the irrelevant part.
Okay.
How can you say that no copies are loaded unless you know that that DECSS does not put a copy on your hard drive when you decrypt it?
I object to the form of the question. You're misstating witness's testimony, not understanding the technology. I'll allow the witness to answer the question if you can.
I'll try to explain this. Basically, copying of DVDs has been going on since virtually day one. When you copy a DVD, you're copying something that's encrypted. And as long as you have a player, the player doesn't care if it's a copy or if it's the original. Whether or not you copy something that is unencrypted onto your hard drive or encrypted, it doesn't make any difference. If DECSS allowed you to copy the unencrypted file onto your hard drive, it's no different than copying the encrypted file onto your hard drive, because what CSS did was decrypt that. All you needed was a valid player, and that would allow you to view an encrypted file. So, again, I've never used it. I don't know anybody who has used it. I don't know anybody who would have the hard drive space to hold an entire DVD. But even if it was possible, and I stress if, it wouldn't make a difference because you could still play an encrypted DVD using a valid CSS player, as has been done for years.
But you've got to first decrypt the DVD, isn't it?
CSS decrypts the DVD.
Right. Now, you read the last sentence.
CSS decrypts the DVD.
Do you believe that that's true?
Yes, that's the purpose of it. It's in every DVD player. Whether it's on an operating system, whether it's a standalone unit, the copy of CSS that's in there is what decrypts the DVD, and that's why I say that if you make a bit-by-bit copy of an illegal DVD, like say from Asia or something like that, as has been done for years, it's not going to know the difference. It'll see the encryption and decrypt it, whether it's a copy or the original. And that's why I say it's irrelevant whether or not you have an unencrypted copy on your hard drive, because you could still just as easily, even easier in fact, decrypt an encrypted copy.
So then I take it you don't know one way or the other whether when you decrypt a DVD a copy is put on the hard drive.
I don't know, since I've never done it.
Now, at the end of that same paragraph, there's a reference to, quote, antiquated encryption export laws, close quote. What does that mean?
I believe that that refers to the fact that there are strict limitations on encryption that we export from this country. And because DVDs are exported overseas, an artificially weak encryption was used.
Because of this law?
Because of a law, I'm not sure which law it is,
right.
that considers encryption an armament and makes
right.
it makes it so that you have to...
considers encryption a what?
An armament.
Armament.
Yeah, and basically force them to encrypt in a rather weak state, something I don't think anybody who knew what they were doing would be happy with. And that, of course, led to it being cracked a lot earlier.
On the same document, sir, the last sentence on page one begins, quote, "That is why we feel it's necessary to preserve this information, period. We do feel sympathy for the DVD industry now that their encryption has been cracked. Perhaps they will learn from this," close quote. What learning did you have in mind?
Well, it was our hope that they'd go on and come up with a better way of encrypting DVDs and learn from the mistakes they made and not continue to go after people. And I should stress that this article is before any papers were filed against us. So obviously, they didn't follow that.
So do you feel or do you believe that the use of part of the use of DECSS is to teach the movie companies that they've got to make tougher protective devices around their copyrighted work?
I don't think anyone went out and said, let's teach them a lesson. I think basically this is something that happened in the natural course of things. And I think it's an opportunity to learn that's being wasted.
Is the export law you talked about in the preceding paragraph still in effect?
Again, I didn't write this article, and I'm not an expert on law, but I do recall hearing sometime in the recent past that Clinton relaxed some export regulations.
And that may or may not be one of them.
It might be.
I see. Consider yourself a hacker?
Yes.
Did you or any other hacker you know
contact
them?
The way he defines hacker.
The way I define hacker, obviously.
In other words, the way he's defined hacker, he considers himself a hacker.
Which shows that you were listening. Did you or any other hacker contact the movie industry or Matsushita or the DVD-CCA to discuss the findings of the DECSS creators?
I'm sorry, can we get on?
What do you have
to do? Let's start with Matsushita.
The question was, did you or any other hacker you know of contact the movie industry or Matsushita or the DVD-CCA to discuss the findings of the DECSS creators?
I check to the floor of the question. Witness can answer all of them.
Back when this happened, which was early November of 1999, I had never even heard of the DVD-CCA, so contacting them wouldn't have even come to mind. We were reporting this as journalists. We were reporting facts. The facts were this happened, this was cracked, and that's what we printed on our pages, that it was cracked.
But if a purpose of the cracking was to teach them that they had to make a stronger protective mechanism to protect their copyrighted work, why wouldn't you or someone else involved with DECSS call them and tell them that?
I imagine they were contacted.
I'll object to the form of the question. The New York Times printed it, the San Jose Mercury News printed it. To my knowledge, no newspaper reported it. That's not his function.
I didn't get the answer if there was one. There was one, yeah.
I couldn't quite hear it.
No surprise.
Objection.
Read the question and let the witness answer it again. We have your objection already. Hopefully that will silence you.
But if the purpose of the cracking was to teach them that they had to make a stronger protective mechanism to protect their copyrighted work, why wouldn't you or someone else involved with DECSS call them and tell them that?
I believe I said I imagined they were contacted at the time.
Oh. By whom?
By, well, at this point, it was pretty widely reported throughout the internet, so for them not to know about it, I think, would be very unusual. But again, we were reporting something that happened. It wasn't our place to go around and make sure that everybody knew about it. It was a fact. We were reporting it. We weren't involved at that point. It was just something interesting that we were following.
At the beginning of the deposition, or maybe before it started, I asked you which name that you would be comfortable that I used, and I think you told me Emmanuel Goldstein.
As you said, either name is fine. Emmanuel is a name I'm known by most people.
And what is your legal name?
Eric Corley is what I was born with.
Eric Corley is
C-O-R-L-E-Y.
And you never officially changed it?
No, that's still my legal name.
I gather there's no objection here with respect to the fact that he wasn't sworn as Mr. Corley, he was sworn as Mr. Goldstein. It's fine. Okay. Were you raised in New York?
Yes.
Which high school did you go to?
Ward Melville High School in East Setauket, New York. That's S-E-T-A-U-K-E-T.
Did you attend college?
Yes. State University of New York at Stony Brook.
And what did you major in?
I was an English major.
Did you attend school after you graduated?
No, I did not.
Did you graduate?
Yes.
And did you begin working? Did that come a time you began working?
Yeah, I worked in numerous capacities for newspapers. And
which newspapers? And to the best you can, what dates?
Well, I worked for a newspaper on campus known as the Stony Brook Press, both as an unpaid writer and a paid typesetter. And then I continued working as a typesetter for a local community paper known as the Village Times. And that's when I began publishing my own publication as well. And the rest is pretty much history.
Do you receive remuneration from 2600?
Yeah, that's my full-time job now.
And is that your sole source of remuneration?
Right now, yes.
And is it correct that the Village Times and then your own publication are the two jobs you've had since graduating?
Going back a long ways, so I believe so. I believe that's where I was working right after graduation. I mean, I had part-time jobs before then, but as far as I know, that's what I had afterwards.
And your home address is what?
7 Strongs Lane. That's S-T-R-O-N-G-S. Also, it's a talk.
And I gather your business address is in the magazine somewhere?
Yeah.
In this 2600 Act reporting?
Yeah, on page 3, I think.
When was 2600 Enterprises, Inc. incorporated?
To the best of my recollection, in 1984. I don't have the specific date.
And it was incorporated in New York?
In New York, yes.
Who were its directors at present?
I'm the sole proprietor.
There is no board of directors?
No, there is not.
And are you the only officer?
Yes.
Does 2600 Enterprises have any employees?
We have an office person who enters subscriptions. And anything else is strictly on a per job basis, such as if we hire an artist to design a t-shirt, if we pay a printer to print the magazine.
Have you had the same printer for several years?
Yeah.
And who's that?
Portside Graphics in Port Jefferson, New York.
And what's the name of your office person?
Her name is Mary, last name Nixdorf, N-I-X-D-O-R-F.
Does 2600 have any function other than 2600, than issuing 2600 the Hacker quarterly?
We publish a magazine, and that's what we do. Things happen along the way, such as having 2600 meetings, but the magazine is really what we do. Even the website is something that just evolved. As a result, we make no money off the website. It's just a project that a bunch of people engage in because they want to become involved in that part of technology.
Are there other websites around the country that are affiliated with this?
The only website affiliated with us is our website and one for the upcoming conference known as H2K.net, which is also on H2K.net. Mm-hmm. It's on the same machine, so it's really the same thing.
And is the Hacker Quarterly put in its entirety on your website?
No. No, the website is a supplement of the magazine. It's not a duplication of the magazine.
Well, each quarter, do you put selected portions of the Hacker Quarterly on your website?
I'd like to, but unfortunately, we don't have the staff to sit around scanning and posting. So right now, no. We'd like to in the future.
So is it rare that you ever put anything that's in the Hacker Quarterly on your website?
Check the use of the word rare.
Well, I don't think it's... I don't think we've ever duplicated anything other than the covers on the website. Not to my recollection.
It's your bad.
Except in this lawsuit, have you or 2600 ever been accused of violating anyone's rights in connection with a hack or in connection with the material that you've published, other than this 1984 thing that you testified?
Do you mean have we gotten letters saying that, threatening letters from lawyers, or have we actually been brought up on charges?
Have you actually been brought up on charges?
No.
Have you got threatening letters from lawyers?
We've gotten a few on occasion.
How did you get them on the...
They were sent to us in the mail, and...
Do they exist now?
I'm not sure what you mean, do they exist now?
Do the letters exist now?
They might be filed someplace. I don't think I could ever find them. We usually print them, so you can find them in the magazine. But nothing up until this point has ever gotten past the first step of a nasty letter being sent.
How many issues of this magazine have been?
Well, we've been coming out for, I guess, 18 years. No, this is volume 17, so 17 years. So
17 times 4 would be the answer.
We've been quarterly since 1988. Before then, we were monthly. So you'll need a calculator.
And you, is it your testimony that you've published all these threatening letters from lawyers in one of these issues?
If we got a letter that was we thought was particularly unjust, yeah. It's been our policy to show people the kinds of threats that are being made against us.
I'm going to ask for copies of all back issues of 2600 and any of the lawyer letters that Mr. Goldstein might have around his office or in his files.
I'll see.
Now I'd like to, what exhibit are we up? I'm sorry.
Can I just clarify, you want all back issues that have lawyer letters published?
No.
You want all back issues.
All back issues.
And any letters that we have. Is that right, Mr. Goldstein?
That's right. That is right.
We'll take it under advisement.
Thank you. exhibit, whatever. What are we up to, sir?
Four.
Mm-hmm. Where are the other copies of that? Copy of Stone. Let me see.
Paul, do you have copies of this first and everything?
What's that?
Yes.
Yeah. You can take a minute to look through that. I guess we'll change the date while he's looking.
Okay, Mr. Gold, I don't know your schedule. As I said, we'd be prepared to go through lunch because I know you want to finish the deposition. We'd also be prepared to work until 5. Again, subject to your convenience, we can work later in the evening to try and give you as much as you can.
Well, as you know, we've advised you that the deposition would be today and tomorrow. I think we'll finish tomorrow. I doubt we'll finish today, and I do feel that the judge, having called a conference and been kind enough to put it at the end of the day, that I should attend it since I have been involved in writing a few letters to him. And I think he may, I'm right about that, aren't I? That I've written a few letters to the judge in the last week or two, and the judge might be interested in talking about one or more of them. I think it would be improper for me not to be there.
You might have somebody else take over the deposition?
No, I think I'll stick with what I noticed, which was today and tomorrow, and trust that I'll finish tomorrow.
I think that you wrote letters, but I don't think the judge will be interested.
That need not be on the video, Tim.
The time is 12:28 p.m. This completes tape number 1 of the videotape deposition of Mr. Emmanuel Goldstein.
I'm sorry, are we taking a lunch break now? Or no?
Okay. He's changing.